Hello and welcome to Roots from LNER. I'm Clara Amfo. All right, tickets please.
I remember singing and actually there was a really loud boy in my class. And when I sang, he just went completely quiet. And then after he was like, "You're really good." Public transport is quite an important way of like finding flow. All of a sudden, you're just exposed to like this energy of like thousands of people and you can feel really boosted by it. Because you need to do that gig where 9 people come, but one person thinks, oh, they're really special and they want to support you to try to get to the next stage in it all.
BLT or GNT? With food and drink delivered to your seat, it's freedom all the way with LNER. Welcome to Roots from LNER. I'm Clara Amfo, and today I am joined by Oscar-nominated, Golden Globe-nominated, Mercury Prize-nominated singer, songwriter, actress, award-winning creative Celeste. Welcome to Roots. Do you like being called award-winning creative?
I feel like I would like to be like award-winning in my personal life. I'm not very good at that.
Babe, listen, you're singing my song.
Yeah.
A lot of us. We try our best. But look, where we may not be making up for it personally, professionally, you're winning at life. No, personally, I feel like you're winning. You seem like, you're in good spirits
today.
Yeah,
that's true. That's true. Things are definitely on the up.
Yeah. How would you describe 2025 so far for you?
2025 so far, I'd say it's kind of been about like being in touch with regaining a sense of like what your energetic space is and like what your energetic field is. And being really aware that like when something might be disruptive to that, and it's not necessarily that anyone is bad that's around you, but it's just like sometimes other people's like information that they're taking on in their day can be like a lot for you to also take on. So I just think I've been like thinking about focus and how you sort of regain focus and what that means you have to set yourself to, and sometimes what it means as well in certain sacrifices. So
do you know, that really checks out, and I think that's so interesting that you share that, because I'm thinking about how long we've known each other.
Yeah.
And I think it's about maybe 8 or 9,
that's what
possibly
I was
10
thinking.
Years.
Like I'm trying to think the first time I've ever met you. I know it's ages ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like obviously there's been a lot of change in that time. The first few times I met you, I remember like, oh, hang on, you're the girl from the Teeks song.
Oh yeah.
Which is a banger.
Yeah.
So dear listener, if you've never heard Sing That Song by the brilliant producer DJ Teeks, he did that song Sunshine. So he's like really, really talented. That's the first time I heard your voice.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's a banger.
Yeah, that's so true. Because maybe I came to you when you were on the radio for the first time and playing like one of my pieces of music for the first time.
Mm.
I feel like maybe you were one of the first people to play Strange or the first.
Yeah.
God.
And look where we are now, Celeste.
Where we
are. A lot has changed in 10 years, because I just remember hearing your voice on the Teeks tune and then not hearing it for a little bit. And then Strange came around. I was like, hang on a minute. Why does this lovely, soft, husky voice sound so familiar? Because, you know, thematically, those songs are so different.
Yes,
you've got this lovely sort of upbeat, like clubby tune. And then, you know, this lovely, ethereal, beautiful, like piano ballad.
Yeah.
And then I think that was, I guess, a lot of people's like main introduction to you.
Yeah, that's so true. I think it's just maturing, because I think I was 18 when I did that song with Teeks. And it was like we were in the studio writing for my own stuff, which was already going much more into that territory of Strange. And then one day he was like, I've made this instrumental and like, would you write something over it? And then we did. And then that he just had a deal. So it just ended up being the first thing that people really heard of me. But I think then as you get older, you learn how to really make clear your own statement, like within your music, in the situation as well, like in the studio of other people that are more experienced and older than you. And I think you learn to like make your voice heard in those rooms and also know how to like get things to come around that you want to come around. But at that age, I was just like, yeah, whatever, cool, like do whatever.
And now you're like, boundaries, energy protection.
That is the move for 2025. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I truly love to see it because I think, you know, a lot of people, and I always say this, they will see someone get the success that you've had so far, you know, all these big nominations, these incredible accolades, like these beautiful collaborations you've been able to do, your solo material, the tour that you've got coming, all this exciting stuff. And they're like, oh, you know, she just appeared. Yeah, and it's like, no. This has literally been a journey.
Yeah, that's very true.
For you.
Yeah, I think it's the same for a lot of artists. Like, I was actually speaking to my friend about it, where you think that it's just like this one miraculous moment that kind of like makes someone's career. And actually, you may have not known that they've been around for 6 years, or it's kind of like a lot of the pop stars that have emerged really successfully in the last year have actually had 6 albums out.
Shout out Sabrina Carpenter.
All of these people, you know, they've been around for a while. And I think there is almost like one shift where you kind of identify like a new path for yourself. And that's maybe where like this change comes. But it is kind of like an accumulation of like lots of small things, like reaching that, like, you know.
But yeah, like I say, you literally have been and are currently on a wonderful journey in your career. Today, we are going to Scotland, but it all started in Brighton.
Yes.
Talk to me about little Celeste running around Brighton.
Well, this is, yeah, it's funny because I suppose where it all really started was Los Angeles, Hollywood.
Okay. Let's go.
My mum was living there and she met my dad there, so I was born there. But my mum is from Essex, so we moved back here when I was 2 and I lived in Dagenham. So that was kind of like a very different experience to then moving to Brighton when I was 6. And then when I got to Brighton, I felt like this new world, like opening, because I feel like I have such fond memories of Dagenham. It was like a very traditional lifestyle still. And perhaps even like, you know, my grandparents had lived there since the 50s. And then I came as like the third generation. And it was like going to Brighton was almost like, oh, this is maybe like the modern world kind of thing. It was all of a sudden like all of the safety of perhaps what that was, which was like really lovely in my memory. But then all of a sudden, all of this like risk-taking in your atmosphere. Like, I felt like Brighton was very much that in the early 2000s. You just felt like people were going there to invent themselves or free themselves and just learning how to be themselves. And I think being surrounded by that as a child, you just kind of think, oh, I can do whatever as well, so.
Yeah, because those places are polar opposites, because when you speak of Dagenham, I mean, the way I think of it, I guess, via pop culture, I'm thinking about that movie made in Dagenham and about cars being made and that kind of old school, working class British sense of community where everyone worked at the same factory and everyone knew everybody. And then by comparison, Brighton is very bohemian and very free. So was that a bit of a culture shock to you?
It was probably a subtle shift that when you're a child, like you can't really fully detect or articulate, but you feel the change in yourself because of how you react to your environment and everything. And definitely it was really bohemian. Yeah.
Do you remember the first thing, person or piece of art that you connected with in Brighton that made you think, hang on a minute, this is a bit of me?
That's a really good question, actually. I think actually, my mum, she worked in like beauty and everything. And one of her clients that I met was a trans woman called Sophie. And I used to go to my mum's work after school. And I always used to see Sophie like coming in. And I just saw like the gradual change. Like at first she would come in like very much still in like male clothing, but you could see she was making like subtle shifts, like painting her nails or like growing her hair. And I just remember being really inspired by her. And then I remember like a year or two later, one day I was leaving school and I saw her walking by. And she had like fully transitioned at that point. And she was wearing this amazing pinstripe suit that was like all tailored. And she'd had so many like amazing procedures made to her body. And she had her hair like red hair and like all like long. And I just remember thinking like she'd just grown into this like really confident, like statuesque woman. And there was a part of me that was like, oh, I want to be like that when I'm older. Or I want to like be able to grow into a confidence that is very much like you have cultivated that yourself. And I don't know, I suppose seeing that made me feel a certain belief in being able to invent and kind of, yeah, like that your confidence can grow. You don't have to just like be it from the beginning. So
I feel like every single person has got that one person from their hometown who they almost like imprint on as a little kid.
Yeah,
thing.
So true.
Hang on a minute. Like there's this famous story, and we spoke to Mel B about it on the podcast with Dolly Parton. Dolly Parton says like when she was growing up in rural Kentucky, there was this woman that everyone called like the local hussy because she was like had a perfect red lip and a nail, big head. Everyone's oh, she's like really cheap. And Dolly was like, nah. I want to look like her. And Mel B said that her person was Bette Lynch from Coronation Street.
Oh, wow.
And so you had Sophie.
That's it. Yeah. And it's just you just remember these people, don't you? Mm. And you don't necessarily know that they'll be so influential on your like imagination, your mind. And yeah.
And growing up around there, where did you find the confidence in your voice? When did you think, oh, hang on a minute, I can actually use this in a way that affects me and other people positively when I sing?
Well, I remember at school, at college, like age 16, my dad had passed away and I was going to college, but I'd always really dress up. Like I'd wear fake eyelashes. I had a weave with a fringe and like hair down to here. And I'd be like doing these glammy looks to college. And I remember the teachers like used to just like wonder, like I'd always be late.
It's not a fashion show, you little Celeste.
Exactly. And I wouldn't really, I'd like be at school, but I might not go to my class. And then I remember the teacher was like, we're going to have to kick you out because you just don't care. Mm. And then actually what happened is I just got really bad anxiety. And in the morning I was like struggling to get out of the house on time because I was like overthinking, but I'd still like go in my outfit kind of thing.
She was still turning out.
Yeah, exactly.
Struggling on the inside, giving it to them.
And they were like, oh, we would never have known because you always come like da 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 da. And she was like, okay, you can stay, but you need to do easier classes because you've missed out on all of your coursework now and everything. So she was like, what about doing this music class? So I did it. And then in the class, you had to sing in front of everyone, even if that wasn't your chosen instrument. And so it kind of broke the shyness because like there was a boy that was more like, I'm good at playing guitar, but he had to sing and he was like really embarrassed. So then I remember singing and actually there was a really loud boy in my class. And when I sang, he just went completely quiet. And then after he was like, you're really good. And I was like, okay, this is interesting. And then he told some other people in the school and they were like, oh, would you want to do a band with us? And I was like, okay. And we got like a tenner each for our first gig. And I was like, oh, this is like a good way to...
Look, when you're 16, 17, £10 is you're balling out of control.
Yeah. Truly. I remember we went to the cash point and we were like, yeah.
What did you spend it on?
Probably alcohol or something like that. And like a bus fare or something.
The essentials in life.
Yeah.
So that was like your first paid gig. But again, like what you say is like, that is again, such a forming moment, isn't it? Knowing that you could affect the loudest boy in class.
Yeah.
And keeping quiet and to get that sort of return back to you in a compliment must have made you feel really powerful.
Yeah, that's so true. And it's just like, it makes you like, switch something on, you're like, oh, maybe there's something in this because you feel it in yourself, but you're not really sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you remember the first time that you traveled for music and entertainment for you as the singer and for you also going to see people sing?
Oh, that's a really good point, actually. Actually, I think the first gig I went to with a friend was in London and it was like Wireless Festival or something.
Oh, the classic.
Yeah. And I mean, someone who's super cancelled right now, so probably can't talk about
I see.
On the podcast.
Say less. Say less. I was there that same year. But we don't have to talk about that person. We can talk about the experience.
Yeah, okay, but yeah.
But yeah, but what was... Talk to me about, I guess, the ritual. Yeah. Like, do you remember the feeling and the day and, like, the planning of going to those sorts of gigs?
I remember, like, a couple of times travelling to London because I was in Brighton and I think firstly going to the studio when I started going to the studio and I had to get to Ladbroke Grove from Brighton.
Mm.
And I remember, which just literally makes me sound like 18 million years old, but I actually drew the map from Ladbroke Grove to the studio, like on a piece of paper. Yeah, I was like, I looked at Google Maps the night before on my computer, but it was a time where like I still didn't really have a phone, like I wasn't really taking a phone around. So I drew like, okay, like this Rose Ladbroke Grove, then you take the first left and then that's whatever street, then it's onto Portobello, then it's behind there. So I remember doing that and also always like really dressing up. Like every time I came into London, I think had this like delusion, like I might get scouted. Like I remember like growing up and people would be like, so-and-so went to London and they got scouted.
You were, what's the phrase? Staying ready, so you don't have to get ready.
Yeah.
I get it. But it kind of happened eventually. Yeah.
Sort of, in some way.
Yeah. So these are some of the first gigs you were going to, those sort of like big outdoor festivals.
Yeah, outdoor festivals. I remember going to this London Fashion Week thing where you could buy a ticket to see a show. I guess now knowing how that works, it must have been like a bit of like an offshoot of like the main event. But I remember you could buy a ticket and they kind of did this preview runway. And then they gave you a magazine at the end, which had like one of the models on the cover. And I remember firstly just being so sort of surprised at how they looked in real life. And also at that time, models were particularly thin and skinny. And I remember my friend and I were actually quite shocked. And that was kind of like our first experience of this fashion world that we'd only really seen in magazines and like in photographs. So that was quite like a learning curve, if you like, in actually like a tactile experience with something that I'd been so obsessed with. And then I was actually like, I remember thinking, okay, this is cool, but I'm actually cool to do my own thing. And yeah.
Here you are, and I've like doing your own thing. So you're going on tour.
Yeah.
Up and down the UK, up and down. Yeah. You're hitting Scotland. Talk to me about your relationship with Scotland. Have you played there quite a lot?
I have played in Scotland.
Yeah.
And I played there in 2022. And it was like my first gig after a couple of years of not really being able to go and play shows. And it was at this amazing venue called Barrowland Ballroom.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like got this iconic neon sign outside. And I think even the fact it's called Ballroom just makes you like really excited to go there.
Opulence.
Yes, opulence. Grand.
Yes.
It's grand. Yeah. And it was just one of my best gigs I've ever done. And I just remember there was such a like genuine reaction from the audience that it made me perform in a way that I've never really performed before. Like so interacting with the crowd and not feeling like there's this like film of like almost like cellophane between like the edge of the stage and the crowd, because sometimes you can go on stage and maybe like a shyness that comes about, you can feel like a bit of a seal between you where you're like, I really want to be more like myself, but I don't feel like I know you yet. And with those like those people in that crowd, I really felt like, oh, like you really know me well and you really accept it, and I feel like I really know you well, and there's like a warmth.
Yeah, the Scots just are really, they're just up for it to be rudimentary in the way I describe it. But they just are. They just like, I don't know, it's a different kind of warmth with
it's
them,
true.
I find.
Yeah, and I think like Manchester's like that.
Yeah.
You feel really free. Birmingham is like one of those places whenever I've gone there, I'm like, whoa, like this is really like true and real and warm feeling. And it's not to say it's not like that in like London, but in London you do meet with a more like critical and like analytical crowd, because I think like you're all very close to perhaps those industries that are producing these like moments, so you're very aware of every kind of like device that's used within a show, because you're probably doing something close to that yourself.
Exactly. You mentioned that you hadn't toured for a couple of years.
Yeah.
Is that A, because of COVID, as well as just like just taking a little break in
general? It was that. It was the pandemic and just that there wasn't anywhere we could go for a while. And then I think like after that, I just had a feeling of just being like, I think I just need to recoup for a moment, because I think perhaps we were quite similar in that time. We just kept working and almost did like everything in a fear of like, what if it doesn't come back around after however long this period of time will be, that things aren't the way that we're used to doing them. And I think I did that. And then after like a couple of years, I was like, okay, like I can actually just take a moment now to like regain a bit of sense of clarity over what is my choice and not my choice out of like fear or like a scarcity mindset kind of thing. And just like, I think it's also... like my experience is like when you don't grow up with like all of those things just at your fingertips and you really have to like work your way into things and then also like start earning your own money and all of that stuff. When something like that happens, you're this like survival instinct just kicks in and you're like, I just have to keep going and like make sure everything works from this point onwards.
Mm.
And then eventually adrenaline kind of depletes and you're like,
can actually reflect. Yeah, because by 2021, it was Oscars, Grammys, BAFTA, album out, like just accolade after accolade, big stages. Like that's a lot for someone to deal with. It's not like you're in a, I mean, obviously you've got your touring band, but it's not like you are in a band with other people. Like it, all the attention is literally on you. Look, you're a mononymed artist, Celeste. No one's using your surname. Like, it's all on you, babe. Do you know what I mean?
I'm wondering if it's more impactful to bring the surname now, though. It feels more like classique. You know?
Do you reckon, would you add it later on?
Maybe, yeah.
Okay. we'll look out for that brand switch up.
Yeah.
But you experienced a lot, all positive things. But with that comes great pressure. So was there a part of you that was quite thankful actually to just be like, you know what, pandemic's terrible, but it's actually all right if I stay at home.
I remember looking at my diary for that year and being like, whoa, this is a bit daunting. Like I'm going to be out for like 9 months and I might not see the people that I'm used to seeing. Like, and then I remember thinking, oh, maybe 2 weeks like is okay. Like this is quite a welcomed like pause. But then when it went on the way it did, I was like, oh no. Like, and and now is the time where it's only just kind of like arriving that I'm finding my way back to like living things and experiencing in the ways that I would have expected to then, basically. Mm. And all those things you mentioned, like the BAFTA and the Oscars, they were all like under that, like the environment that it was at that time, like very controlled and you couldn't, there was no one there, basically. There was no audience. You had to wear a mask backstage. You didn't really get to talk to anyone backstage. It didn't really have all the fanfare around it that those events have now and that you realise that they do now that they're back in full swing in the way they run, basically.
Yeah.
Like you didn't really have that thing of meeting like, you know, your favourite actor on the carpet and having like a little chat. It was really like everyone was quite worried and just
2 metres apart.
Yeah, you just had to kind of go in, do your thing and leave. So I'm excited to have a bit of an experience of what those things are like when they are like running in the way that they usually do.
Yeah, and you're going to just get to see more of the world.
Yes.
Which I want to talk to you more about.
I hope so, yeah.
Traveling, getting out there. Like, where is the furthest place you've been now for work? And where is the most random place that you've found that you've got fans and you've been recognised?
Oh, wow, that's a cool question. Actually, I suppose the furthest I've been to do a gig so far is Cuba.
Oh, fabulous.
Yeah, which was really cool. And it was really interesting doing a gig there because it was like the first gig since the pandemic. And the last gig they had was the Rolling Stones, which was like hundreds of thousands of people went. And I did this like smaller thing in a theater. But because it was quite a big moment that people were coming in and traveling and doing shows, it was on their local news. And kind of like how it used to be here, they still kind of have like 3 or 4 main channels. So then the next day when I went out for a walk, like everywhere I went, people were like, we know you.
Hola, Celeste.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, that was so unusual. And I loved that experience and such like kind, like beautiful and interesting, like enriching people there. That's probably one of my favorite places that I've performed. And people, I'm trying to think if there's anywhere in England that I've gone where I've been like, I did not know you guys liked me. But I suppose in England it's so small that like you have an awareness that there's like certain areas that are kind of listening to you. And even when you do your shows in London, sometimes people will travel. Like I remember once I did a show at Union Chapel and this man was waiting on the steps as I arrived and he travelled from Wales and he was just really, really early. He was so lovely and I actually remember his name. Yeah.
you don't know you do?
No, I do. I think his name was Terry.
Shout out Terry.
Yeah, he was wearing this really sweet little head tie.
Oh, I love
that. Yeah.
I'll pick up Terry.
Yeah,
that's so kind. Like, are you noticing a difference? I mean, what you tell me, like when it comes to your sort of fan base, I'm assuming they don't look just one way. Does it surprise you when you look out at your crowds, like who's there?
It's changed a lot because, like, 4 years ago, the main way that I was getting known was, I guess, going on the TV or maybe the radio. And that audience is, like, quite specific. And then since then, I guess, like, virality has become so much more a part of people's career. And then...
But you're not out here doing TikTok dances.
No, I don't do that. But I've had a couple of viral songs on there. So then it changes your audience, which I love, because then you do see, like, all kinds of people at your shows, and then you see how they interact in a room as well, which is important, I think, and interesting, like, to not be so closed off to, like, your own age group or your own background or, you know, whatever. Mm. Yeah.
So on the flip side, away from work, where are you going to relax, Celeste? What's been your best travel, your best holiday?
Oh, this is a good question. My best holiday.
You can talk about freely.
Okay. I went to Barbados.
Oh, fabulous.
Which was really lovely. And the people are just so kind. And there's these kind of like minivans that go along like the main road, like most of the day. And you can just like put your hand out and then you get on the bus for like $7. And there's other people on the bus too. And then you can just get out wherever and then walk on to the next part of your journey, which I love. Like, I know this is what this podcast is about. I actually genuinely love public transport. Like, that sounds like I'm...
Speak on it.
...pretending. But I make the point to kind of be getting the tube and to be getting the bus or the train, like, when I go and visit family and stuff, because I just like the interaction with people. And actually, I spend so much time in places where, like, you have to drive. And I think that's something so special about, well, London and traveling in general, that all of a sudden you're just exposed to like this energy of like thousands of people, and you can feel really boosted by it. And you can also recognize when maybe there's like a change in the temperament of like a society. But I think it's like important to have that read and have that gauge of people, because it makes you like know that you're a part of something. And there's like any feelings of loneliness that can occur, like just by like you just being so in your own life, kind of are softened when you like interact with the world and like, you know, other people just going about their daily lives. I feel it's really important, actually.
No, it really is important to be plugged in. It's like, I don't know about you, like, when I'm particularly when I'm doing like a long train journey, I mean, everyone does this. We've all got main character syndrome.
You
want to stare out the window. You want to look wistfully outside of the grass and the sheep and whatever you're passing by, and you know, and think about life. But I always like look at strangers and I think, I wonder what's going on with that person, or like, what's your name?
Yeah, it's so true.
Where are you
true.
From? Do you get inspired for your songs, like looking at people?
Definitely. Yeah. You kind of make up stories for people, don't you? But you can also be really sensitive to maybe like what's going on in someone's life, and there's no verbal communication, but you just a look and you can kind of can tell. And sometimes like you end up speaking to people you don't know, and you find out about this whole life that is interesting. And that's happened a lot of times actually on the train for me. Like, once actually I met this man and I was just really intrigued by him, and we accidentally ended up sitting quite close to one another on quite an empty carriage, and he was Jamaican, and I think he picked up on that I am Jamaican too. And then he just started spilling all this information to me, almost like psychic angel or something, and he just said loads of things about my life that he would never have known, that no one really knows. And I think that's quite common actually for people. And then another time, like, I met this amazing lady called Edwige, and she was a singer, and she gave me her website, and she gave me a little card, and it had like a hologram thing of a little angel on it. And I went and listened to her music, and she had the most amazing, like, high angelic voice. And I don't know, like, they're just people that you might not ever meet in your life, but it's really enriching and a thing of value, you know, that you don't forget kind of thing.
It's really encouraging to hear that. Yeah. I think there's been a lot of chat. I mean, I definitely noticed, like, as someone who's allegedly chronically online, I don't think so. No, do you know what? I'm just really into, like, conversations that we're having at the moment. Yeah. And, like, one big conversation on TikTok is about individualism.
Okay.
And how we've become less community focused in 2025, and how everyone is so essentially so obsessed with themselves.
But
then on the flip side, hearing you talk about, you know, having these interactions with strangers on public transport suggests the opposite. And it is that thing of, like, when we get out of our own way and actually take the time to speak to people, like, it makes you feel alive, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. It really does. Yeah. I've met a graphic designer once on the train, this girl called Cece, and she was just with her skateboard, and I was like, oh, she looks really cool. So I just started chatting to her, and then I was like, what do you do? And she was like, oh, I'm a graphic designer. And then she made me a poster for my show or something. So, you know, I just think public transport is quite an important way of, like, finding flow. For me, it's like, it really is an important way of, like, finding, like, connectivity with, like, my environment and not just being, like, in a car, like, on my own kind of thing.
Yeah. And when it comes to taking your talents and then applying it to somebody else's vision of the world, I'm talking about soundtracks now, because, you know, you've lent your voice to so many incredible things. Also, the Day of the Jackal, I was obsessed with.
I finished
it all in one sitting. It's brilliant. Obviously, like, your voice is on the theme of that.
Yeah.
I mean, looking at the list of other things that you've lent your voice to, you know, Pixar's Soul, The Color Purple, that John Lewis advert, you know, it's the list goes on. Like, how do you practice, I guess, the art of lending your voice to telling somebody else's story?
Oh, this is a really good question.
That's why they pay me the big bucks, Jerry.
I like it. I suppose when someone gives you a sort of brief or they give you, like, a character that you kind of need to focus on, you just still have to kind of figure out how your, like, emotion relates to the detail of what they're describing they need. So I always try to pick things and kind of say yes to things I already feel like there's some connection there. Like, I think with Day of the Jackal, it was kind of about, like, the complexity of an individual and kind of, like, how somebody comes to find peace with who they are in their work life and who they are in their personal life.
Assassin family man.
Exactly. Yeah. And then how it affects their relationships and everything. So, yeah, I thought, and Bianca's character, she kind of has that same like struggle where she can't quite tell her partner, like, what she's doing with her career. And then it affects her love life. And I don't know, I feel that's actually quite the story for a lot of career women, isn't it? It's kind of this battle. It's a funny thing. I think that will change, like, for the younger generation. They'll be a bit more equipped to understanding, like, some sense of equality in those roles. And we're still in that kind of group where psychologically, I think, like, what we still, like, desire and crave is still set on kind of, like, an older idea. An ideal that means, like, we have an idea of our role, but it doesn't quite fit our instincts in what we're attracted to.
I feel that deeply.
To learn and grow. Yeah.
Listen, I mean, that could be a whole other podcast in itself. My darling,
that's
Celeste.
That's
it is. Like, can we have it all? Yeah. Let's discuss on a long train journey.
Yeah, exactly.
No, but I think, but at the same time, look, we're writing our own rules as well. And with what you do, like, you are the boss essentially of, like, Celeste Inc. Because now you're in a position now where you're not waiting to be someone's support artist. Like, you're a headlining artist. You've got a really strong fan base. You've got a whole, I guess, new chapter of your career to enjoy and to challenge you now.
That's
especially
true.
Being on tour, because you get to create these worlds that your fans are going to come and see.
So
for someone that's never been to a Celeste show, what can they expect for 2025? Are we upping the ante? And how do you transport that city by city and still keep it cohesive?
That's a really good point, actually. I think towards the end of the year is where I'll start to introduce, like, a new visual world on a bigger scale. And I'm spending all of my time now thinking about, like, simple elements that can be like sort of, yeah, like grand in a way, because you do have to think about like, how do you travel with these things? How much does it cost to have these things traveled as well? But also I think sometimes like something so simplistic, like recently I just thought of something where like I thought of like having a step machine for some reason on stage.
Like in the gym.
Yeah, but almost like a stairway that's like leading to like, you know, like almost like a metaphoric staircase. And I was like, could you do that? Do you want something that's just like draped in the background? So that's all what's going on now to come later. But then the first part of my touring around April time, around this time, is going to be a really simplistic show. And it's just going to be on piano. And it's in association with the Music Venue Trust. So venues that have been potentially at risk of being closed because of little funding or, you know, like the quietness that we had in the last few years. And I'm just going to do piano and just do my new songs because I just want to see what people think of them, really, without the huge scale production, which can kind of sometimes like beguile people because there's just this like huge thing going on in front of them. I just want to know, like, have I written some good songs or not?
I like it. So you're going to essentially be workshopping it, like with your fans.
Yeah, yeah, I suppose so. Yeah, I think it's important because I haven't really played shows to my fans properly for a few years. Like I've done little things here and there. I did a thing in the street in Portobello for Rough Trade, like last record store day. And that was really good because I just had no idea who would come and I'd only really put it on my Instagram. Mm. And a lot of people came. So I was like, okay. And tried some of the new music then. So, yeah.
I think that's really important. It ties back into what you're saying, which is so, it's, you know, I think we really need to shout about that loudly about supporting small venues because up and down the UK, so many closed down.
Yeah.
And these spaces, like they're vital for people, whether you are the person that makes the music or the person that wants to come and enjoy it. Like they're so formative to like our development, aren't they?
Yeah, they're so important. I think, like, you know of Hack Baker.
Yeah.
Yeah, and his manager, Kwame. I think he did a talk in the Houses of Parliament and he made a really good point. And then I made it again. I didn't mean to plagiarise his words, but just about how you need, like, the variation between venues for 100 people, venues for 300 people, then to get to 1,000 before you can get to that 10,000 at Brixton or whatever it is, or at Ali Pali. Like, you have to have places to grow. You have to have places that you can be booked at whilst you're still kind of on your trajectory of hopefully like doing things on that bigger scale, because you need to do that gig where 9 people come but one person thinks, oh, they're really special and they want to support you to try to get to the next stage in it all.
Yeah, because ultimately it just makes you become a better artist, because I think there is, you know, like we all lived through the sort of reality TV era of like these big singing competition shows. And don't get me wrong, I enjoyed them as much as the next person. Like,
yeah.
I'm a nerd. I love watching people's auditions on YouTube. I can watch them for hours. But we've definitely seen that thing of like, okay, someone's plucked out of obscurity and then all of a sudden they're playing big arenas up and down the UK and they never had a chance to do that bit in the middle like that you talk about, you know, playing for 9 people, playing for 100, playing for 1,000. So like I think for you to sort of invest back into that culture of just you and a piano or you busking or turning up at a record, like it's really vital, isn't it?
It's so important. Yeah, I do the same. I watch those auditions.
That's so good. What's your favourite?
Jennifer Hudson.
Yes.
Yeah, I've watched her so many times because she's got one of my favourite voices. But it's just so intriguing to see like what spirit do these people have like when they decide to go and do that. And she was very confident and bold and she was like, I'm going to be the next biggest star and like get ready to listen to my voice. And everyone was like, but she also had this like kind of like quietness to her too. Like she was bold but shy. And I thought that was really like intriguing because she had the talent to kind of like back it up kind of thing.
Exactly. And then she didn't win the show, but then in the future won an Oscar.
Yeah.
Is like a Tony Award winning producer.
Yeah.
Has got a really successful like TV show. Gave us the Aaron Pierre. That's a corridor. And who knew? And that's from not winning those shows. And it just shows you, isn't it? Like no one's got like one particular like journey to success. Mm. Like there isn't one way to do it.
No, there's really not. It's funny though, sometimes I think like now that I've been in the music industry for a little bit, those shows, they are kind of just like a sped up version of it all. Like there are kind of like certain phases that do exist still within that career, like getting to perform in front of certain people that might give the green light to be like, okay, we're going to back this.
Get the haircut you don't want?
You know? The heck? No, never that.
I'm glad.
Even though I have had some bad hair.
Like what?
Days. Just like when I just had some dodgy stuff.
I'm trying to think, I'm like, have I ever seen Celeste with bad hair?
If you go into a deep dive on Getty Images, you'll see.
Listen, some of those photographers will pay for their crimes, yeah. I'm sorry. Like, this is extreme first world problems. You know what it is. Like, you get dressed up. You think, you feel like you look good. It's like, quick picture. You're like, okay, fine. It's like, I didn't look like that. And they always print the worst picture of you. Boo-hoo. The price of being out here. So, let's talk about the new album.
Yeah.
How are you feeling about it?
Well, I think the journey to, like, completing my second album has been treacherous. No, it's been a difficult thing, actually. I think it's quite famous, I think, that like the second album is really difficult for people, because I know from my perspective, you put so much more weight on what your like artistic statement is going to be, and you're aware of what worked for you before on a personal level, and you're aware as well what works for you like amongst your peers. And I think that's a really important part of it, because you want to be able to like have collaboration. And if you like reach certain markers like of like commercial success, but you don't necessarily have like the integrity beneath it with like that's truly like detectable within your music or like your output, then you don't really get that opportunity to collaborate. So I feel like this time, like I put so much emphasis on like wanting the recorded music to be a representation of like my choices, because what happened on my first album is like I kind of just do it at my shows, and I'd like make it really sound how I wanted it to at my shows. But then of course, like I collaborate with producers, I collaborate with co-writers, that there's always going to be an imprint from like others when you're collaborating. So again, like I've still come up against that, and that's why it's taken so long, because I think this time I've really like pushed back. And even now, like it's nearly finished, and I still have things that I listen to and I'm like, I would like this to maybe be like that. But that's part of the compromise and then collaborating with people that also like have experience that you learn from that like you haven't got.
Mm.
But it does make me think about, you know, how do I want to make music going forward in the future, and what kind of team do I want to build around myself? Because with my first album, a lot of my freedom was visually and how I dress and the odd song here and there. But I definitely had to meet like a compromise. This one is far more me. And then, you know, so it's just figuring out like at each step, like how do I regain a bit more of a sense of what my identity is within that? And I really rely upon like those live moments to show that, really.
And that's why when it's just going to be you and a piano, you're going to get that yeah. instant feedback yeah. that you...
Yeah, that's
that you
it.
Desire
yeah.
from your fans.
Yeah, yeah.
And can I ask actually, so like with that, where do you draw the line between, okay, I'm giving you me
yeah.
because obviously I'm the creator,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
but you're the person that invests in me. So clearly I've got to listen to you a little bit. How, where do you find the compromise with your fans? Because obviously you spoke about the people that you work with.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
But there's obviously the people that love Celeste.
It's so true. I think with that, you just have to trust that the people that really love you will kind of always understand a part of what you're doing, even if it comes as a bit of a surprise or it's not totally what they expect of you. Just trust that the ones that are going to be with you, they're going to be there, kind of thing. I think like do anything you can to like honour them and those people. And I think that's my new music definitely does that. And I don't know, I guess when I perform, I give a lot of emotion, and that's kind of for other people. It's not for me to like relive
the trauma of what inspired those songs in the first place.
Yeah. It's just so other people can feel like what this resembles in an experience that they might have had in their own life, really. So, yeah.
And when it comes to being somebody else, are we going to see more of that, more acting in the future? Obviously, you're in Blitz.
Oh, I hope so.
Mm.
I feel like if I am to do anything like that, I really need to do something that's like really shows that I will speak or something. Or I always imagine playing a role of a woman on her own for like the majority of the film, and you can see that she's living in this like great turmoil, but you don't really know why. But just like the emotional telling of it is enough that you don't really need to know. And then you see her like in her interior life, like in her home, and you can see there's something going on for her. And then you see her like going out to the shops and how she is perceived by the world, perhaps. Like, I always imagine doing something like that, but I don't know what that is. But
maybe you should write it.
Maybe one day, maybe one day someone will say, I've got that, or and you could do it.
I feel like that, yeah. You're definitely giving us triple threat.
I don't know if I can.
Or double
dance.
Threat. I mean, like, is it a two-step situation? Is it a basic two-step situation for you?
Mine's kind of like some interpretation of some like funky house, acid house dancing that I must have like picked up from my mum. And it's a bit like that. Yeah. But when I perform, I try to be this like elegant broken ballerina, but that's not really how I dance.
You know what? As you say that, I am thinking about you're a very like gentle gesticulator, aren't you? When you sing, there's a lot of good elongated hands.
Yeah.
some wrist twirls. That is the Celeste movement.
Yeah, the wrist. I can't even say it, but you know that. Yeah.
There's that. But it works for you. Look, Celeste, thank you so very much for joining me on Roots from LNER. Do keep an eye out for new music and new tour dates on the way for Celeste. Now, thank you so very much for listening. If you like what you heard, because of course, how could you not? Why not rate, review, and give us a follow wherever you get your podcast. Also, look out for Celeste's Quiet Coach episode, which is going to be dropping next week. We're going to be hearing about her traveling snacks, tracks, and hacks, and what places have inspired and ultimately changed her. Until then, see you at the next stop.
BLT or GNT, with food and drink delivered to your seat, it's freedom all the way with LNER. Roots from LNER, a Distorted production.